When they hunt Sri Guru, Sri Uttarapur, Sri Guru, Sri Rasta, Sri Rupa, Sambhadatham, 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 Sri Radha, Vishnu, Padam, Sambhadatham, Sri Shapam, Padam, Sri. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. To be meditating on the pastime of Lord Brahma stealing the boys and calves. Now this is, again, it's from Krishna book. It's from the DBT canto with purports. I've also looked at all of the commentaries of the Acharyas, Sridhar Maharaj, Sanatana Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and Jiva Goswami. And then I've also looked at Kavi Karnapur's Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and a few others. Pivantiye bhagavata atmana satam katam vita shravana pute shusamutam punantite vishaya vidushita swam vrajanti tachcharana sarvavavavata. This verse is spoken by Sukadeva Goswami as what Jiva Goswami describes as the ending of the Bhagavatam, answering Maharaj Pruksit's question. It says, those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him. So this particular story we're going to meditate on now will fulfill all of our spiritual desires. That's the benediction given. So before we start, I'd like each of us just to take a few seconds to meditate on what are our spiritual desires. Whenever you start something, you have to have a goal. The suggest. So if we could take a minute and think, what are our spiritual desires? And we can ask the Lord to please fulfill these desires by our meditating on this pastime. And there's a section in this pastime that's really nice in terms of the desires of the devotees. This pastime is also very unique, and I'm going to read here a little paragraph from Jai Dvaita Maharaj. For Srila Prabhupada's final literary work, what was Prabhupada's final literary work? What was the last thing that Srila Prabhupada gave us? The very last thing he did before he left the planet. 10th canto, which chapter? 13. And that's this one. So this is Srila Prabhupada's very last literary work. Who here has seen the video of Prabhupada speaking in the dictaphone when he's lying there on his bed emaciated? Who's seen that? Anybody here seen that? You can read in this chapter what Srila Prabhupada says in the microphone that's on that video. Everything is acting and moving by the supreme direction of Krishna. That's in this chapter. So Jai Dwarchamara says that this was an extraordinary collaboration between Srila Prabhupada and Prajumna. While Srila Prabhupada lay prone on his bed close to death, Prajumna, having studied the Sanskrit verses and the Sanskrit commentary Srila Prabhupada preferred, would read them to him in Sanskrit in small portions. Some portions Prajumna would translate and read out, some Srila Prabhupada himself would translate, and Srila Prabhupada would comment. The translations and commentary recorded on tape were then blended and edited together to become the text for this chapter. And we also have sections in the purports that are directly from Krishna book. I asked Jai Dvaita Maharaj about it, and he said that what would happen is when Prabhupada would come to certain verses, he'd say, take such and such portion from Krishna book and put it into the purport. So this is it's very extraordinary. Actually, I would suggest that you sometime go to the BBT Bhagavatam and meditate on this chapter and really meditate on what situation Srila Prabhupada was in when he was translating. This is the very last things he said before he left our association. So this pastime takes place on what day? going to happen in less than 2 weeks. What day does this past time? Yes. Balaram's birthday. Yes, this pastime happens on the appearance day of Lord Balaram. And therefore, he was at home. And that's because Krishna didn't want him to be stolen. So Krishna had just performed a pastime, which was the killing of Agastya. Now, after Krishna killed Agastya, everybody was celebrating. I just imagine if there was some big demon that tried to swallow the temple. And all of us. Right? And Giridhari saved us. So everybody was celebrating, and the celebration went all the way up to Satyaloka. So you ever been trying to do something and your neighbors are having a really big party? Right? And Soho's free temple, any of you have been there, it happens all the time. Sometimes it's hard to sleep because the neighbors are having their tamagun party. So there's this big party celebrating Krishna's killing the Agastya demon that was happening on the planets right next door to Lord Rama. He heard it. And what happens when you hear, let's say, right here on the farm, you hear a big party going on? What would you do? What'd you do? You'd go and see what was happening, right? You'd walk out, you'd open up your door, you'd look out. What's going on here? Right? And now the other thing that happened is we all know that after Krishna killed Agastya, Agastya's spirit soul came out and it merged into Krishna's body, but that was just temporary, like Shishupala. After merging into Krishna's body, then he assumed his spiritual form, his swarup, and he went to Vaikuntha. So when the living entities go to Vaikuntha, they often go in a chariot through the universe. So when Lord Brahma came out to see what was the party going on next door, he also sees this chariot going to Vaikuntha with Agastya in his Vaikuntha form in it. And he thinks, I wonder what's going on. So he asks some people what's going on, and he decides that he's going to come to Earth too soon. So Lord Brahma comes to the Earth planet, and then what does he see? Well, before we find out what he sees, Sukadeva Goswami mentions, very casually, oh, by the way, Maharaj Parikshit, this whole story was not told to the residents of Vrindavan until a year after it happened. And Maharaj Parikshit said, well, that's rather odd. Why is that? So this is, of course, the interplay between the speaker and the listener, just like an expert storyteller ends with a cliffhanger or some sort of surprise. And then Maharaj Parikshit, what's that? What happened? And Sukadeva Goswami says, your eagerness to hear is giving me enthusiasm. Right? Because Maharaj Parikshit said, there's got to be some kind of trick of Krishna involved in this, some sort of potency of Krishna involved in that story. Because usually the coward boys would go home. Remember this. This will come up. Usually the coward boys would come home every day and say, guess what Krishna did today? Right? But they didn't do that for a year. So now, Sukadeva Goswami says, to answer your question, let me describe what Lord Brahma saw. He saw Krishna and the coward boys having killed Agastya, looking around, and Krishna says, oh, look, there's a perfect place for our lunch. You must all be hungry. And the coward boys are thinking, if we're hungry, you must be hungry too, Krishna. We'd like to make sure that you eat. Krishna said, it's gotten kind of late. And look how soft the sand is here. Of course, all the sand in Vrindavan is soft. And we can hear the echoing of the birds and the peacocks, and the trees are kind of rustling the leaves. And the combination of the rustling leaves and the birds and the peacock are making a little symphony. And then there's a scent of lotus flowers coming off the Jamuna. There's a bunch of trees overhead that have intertwined their branches into a canopy to protect us from the sun. The coward boys say, yes, yes, let's eat here, Krishna. We don't want you to be hungry, but we don't want to have to worry about the calves. So let's tie up the calves to the trees nearby in a field where they can eat the grass. Then when they ate, Krishna sat in the middle. Krishna sat in the middle. Now, just like with all of our activities, we should always have Krishna in the middle. And as explained in Bhagavad Gita 13:14, that Krishna is talking about the Supersoul, his eyes and arms and legs are everywhere. So in the same way, although Krishna sat in the middle, every cowherd boy who was sitting in circles around him thought, Krishna's only looking at me. Actually, every cowherd boy thinks, I'm Krishna's favorite. And Sanatana Goswami says, and it's true, every one of them is Krishna's favorite. And they're all thinking, Krishna's only looking at me. Whereas all the other cowherd boys, they're just seeing Krishna sort of on the side or on the back. Right? And the cowherd boy sitting with Krishna in the center looked like a rainbow. You know the colors of the rainbow? So it looked like the center was bright red going to violet with the ever-expanding circles of boys. Now, the boys all had little baskets of lunch that they had brought from home. And they decided to pretend. Hopefully we can remember being children and how fun it is to pretend. So they decided to pretend that they had plates because they didn't bring plates with them. So some of them took flowers and made those into plates, and some of them took leaves, some of them took rocks, some of them took barks, and some of them bark of trees, and some of them used their baskets, and they all put out their plates. And as they're eating, they're giving the food to their friends. Hey, taste what my mother made for me. Oh, here, why don't you try some of this? And they're giving it to Krishna. Krishna, why don't you try this? And they're all joking. One boy, he took out the filling from his samosa and ate it. And he took some jasmine flowers and stuck it in the samosa. And then he gave it to another cowherd boy. He said, taste this samosa that my mother made. The cowherd boy, ah! And then they started chasing after the first boy, beating him up, you know, and then some bee starts flying around Madhu Mangal, and they say, you offensive bee, trying to bite a brahmana, and they're all running after the bee, and then some boys see some monkeys, and they say, hey, how is it the monkeys are just sitting there not stealing anybody's food? These other boys aren't even noticing. Come on, monkeys, come on up here and steal the food. And the monkeys come and steal the food, and the boys run after them. And Krishna's sitting there and eating, even though he accepts everything offered in sacrifice. Very formal. Right? And when we eat, we usually eat just with our right hand. Right? And Krishna's eating with both hands. So in his right hand, he has some achar, some pickle. And in his left hand, he has, what does he have in his left hand? What does he have? Yogurt and rice and fruit. And you can see the little bits of fruit sticking between his fingers. So he's just about to eat, and even though the cows were tied up, somehow they wandered away. And we're going to see this in another story, too. They thought, oh, there's nicer grass over there. Do we ever do that? We have something nice where we are, we think, there's nicer grass over there. So they started wandering away. And, of course, the cowherd boys were involved with their lunch. They thought the cows were tied up. And all of a sudden, they look and they say, oh, the cows are gone. Remember, each cowherd boy is responsible for thousands of cows. That's their service. That's their duty. And also, that's their livelihood. Cows are gone. And they became very afraid. And Krishna says, don't worry. You don't have to interrupt your lunch. I'll do it. So, of course, all the devotees were always saying, Krishna, you don't do anything. I'll do it. I'll dress you. I'll bathe you. I'll cook for you. I'll clean for you. You don't have to do anything. You just be the bhokta. You just be the enjoyer. I'll serve you. And then Krishna says, no, my devotees, you enjoy. I'll serve you. And as soon as Krishna said, I'll get the calves, immediately the boys had no fear. So how wonderful Krishna is. Of course, materialistic people are always trying to get God to serve them. My dear Lord, please give me some money. Please give me a nice wife. Please give me a good job. Let me get good grades in my exam. I just had someone I don't know, never met in my life, contact me over the computer and say, would you pray for me? I said, what would you like? Please pray that I pass my exams. So generally, we're asking Krishna to serve us like that. I don't want to go through trouble. Just have the money fall in the window while I sit here and sleep. There used to be a publication devotee publication that had personal ads in it where people would advertise looking for a husband or wife. And this one man, they were supposed to write in, "What's your favorite service?" He says, "My favorite service is to sleep and dream about Krishna." So sometimes we think, you know, I'll just sleep and Krishna will send in the everything. Krishna will cook the meals. Right? I'll fall asleep on the chariot. Krishna will fight the war. So people are always wanting to make Krishna their servant. But here we see that Krishna willingly becomes the servant of his devotees. So Krishna was so eager to serve his devotees and find the cows that he didn't even finish what he was eating. You know, usually if we're in the middle of eating and we want to run out, we finish it first, right? You don't just run out with some food in your hand. But he just left immediately, and he still had this rice and yogurt and fruit with the fruit sticking through his fingers that looked like petals. Now, of course, Krishna knew exactly what was going on, but he starts looking. And it describes he looked in mountains, mountain caves, and valleys. So he looked in a very large area. I mean, one can imagine how much time it would take an ordinary person to look in a very wide area. Of course, in the material world, often people are missing and there's some search party for them. Right? My son just told me that he and his wife went to a beach and some child goes lost in the water, and they spent like 2 hours. They finally find the child, you know, sending out a whole search party, sometimes days. Sometimes hundreds of thousands of people are looking for a lost child for days and spreading over a wide area. So here was a search party of one, and Krishna's looking and looking and looking and looking and looking. And while Krishna's looking, Lord Brahma also takes away the boys. Now again, of course, Krishna knew what was going on, but he wanted to bewilder Lord Brahma. Now, Lord Brahma, although he's called Aja, he's born from the lotus flower, still he's materially born, and he's subject to the four defects. And he's thinking, who is this boy? Is this my Lord Narayan? Let me see how much power he has. Again, we know that Balaram wasn't there, so Balaram was not taken. Now, Prabhupada says that the real boys were covered by Yogamaya, that really this whole year, the boys and cows were still there, and Krishna in expanded form was still with them, but being covered by Yogamaya, Lord Brahma actually took away Maya boys and calves, very much like the way Ravana took away a Maya Sita, because Lord Brahma can't touch Krishna's personal associates. What happened to our heat? Doesn't work. Or it's just there, but not in. Heat would be nice. Yes. Then Krishna, again, he's looking, it's described, he's looking like an actor. He's playing a role. And apparently, after looking and looking and looking, he decides, all right, what are we going to do now? If I go back to Vrindavana by myself, all of the parents and all of the cows are going to be very aggrieved. So Krishna expanded himself, and what's interesting is that Krishna, now this is a very important point. When he expanded himself as all the boys and the calves, each of them had all their original characteristics. So they all looked exactly the same. They all liked the same food. And sometimes people think that spiritual perfection means that we all become one. But here we see that these spiritually perfect beings, they have their favorite food, they have their favorite colors, they have their favorite clothes, they have their particular personality. Some of you may be familiar with personality tests. There's like the Myers-Briggs and the DISC, and there's so many different personality tests. And each of us has our, well, you can say, well, these people are extroverts, well, these people, but still, each of us has a unique personality, like each of us has a unique fingerprint and unique DNA. So Krishna expanded with every unique feature of every single boy and calf. Now remember I told you what the cowherd boys always did when they came back to the village? What did they do when they first came back? Every day. What did they say? Guess what Krishna did today? Now when the boys and calves came back this day, they didn't say that. Because they were all Krishna. So, that was the first day when they came back. fact that they didn't say, guess what Krishna did today? But nobody noticed. And all the parents, you know, for so many years, they would see Yasoda and Nandamarsh and think, I'd like to do that service too. I wish I could feed Krishna my milk. I wish I could put Krishna in my lap. I wish I could bathe Krishna. And even the cows would think like that. I wish I could take care of Krishna. So Krishna fulfilled all of their desires. Now, generally speaking, a mother distinguishes between the love for her child and the love for other people's children. So those of us, you know, who are mothers, we may think about some other people's children as if they were our children. Like I've had students who lived in my home for 1 or 2 years, some of them maybe 4 or 5 years, and I think of them like my children. But still, there's a difference between my children and somebody else's children. No matter how much I think of someone else's child like my child, there's always some distinction. Right? But after this pastime, those distinctions vanished. The parents felt exactly, could you imagine that? Feeling exactly the same way towards all the children in the community as you felt towards your own child. And exactly the way that you felt towards Krishna. Now you might say, how is this possible? How did Krishna allow this to happen? Because you remember Krishna became like each one of the boys and calves? Exactly like them? So that means the relationship should have stayed the same too, right? But it didn't. The relationship between the boys and the parents and the cows changed. So why, if Krishna kept exactly the same characteristic, didn't he keep exactly the same relationship? Because there's something to which Krishna becomes subordinate. And that is? What controls Krishna? Pure love. Pure love. So because these parents and the cow parents and the human parents had so much love, Krishna allowed their relationship to their so-called boys to change into the relationship to him. And nobody noticed this was happening. Even Balaram. One day, 5 or 6 days before Balaram's birthday, the next year. So that would be, let's see, Balaram's birthday is a week from Thursday, so about a week from today. Wouldn't it be nice if we had festivals to commemorate all these things? Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj that you could have a festival every day to commemorate all these different pastimes. So about 5 or 6 days before Balaram's next birthday, Krishna and Balaram are out with the calves. And they're grazing, the calves are grazing at the foot of Govardhan Hill. How many of you here have ever been to Govardhan Hill? Govardhan Hill is mostly what?
Rocks.
Would you want to run down Govardhan Hill? Anybody here want to run down Govardhan Hill? So the cows were pasturing at the top of Govardhan Hill. Of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't climb the hill, so neither do we. But you see, many of the local residents will climb the hill and walk over the hill to get where they want to go. And the cowherd men were taking care of the cows. Now, Krishna's devotees are generally victorious in whatever they want to do. Usually, Krishna's pure devotees, they want to do something, they succeed, generally speaking. Right, like Sanjaya said, wherever there's Krishna or Arjuna, there's always going to be victory. So they're used to things working out pretty well. And that's their job, to take care of the cows. And all of a sudden, the cows start running away. And they get out their sticks and they're yelling at the cows and they're trying to hurt, and it's not working. You think of some service that you have that you do regularly, that you're pretty good at, you know, you've really got it down, how to make the chapatis, how to do this, right? You know, and it's just not working. It's just not working at all. Nothing you're doing is working. You're failing and you're failing and you're failing. The chapatis are all turning out like crackers and the subject is burning. And you know, or your voice isn't coming out right when you're reading the kirtan, or nobody's buying any books, or, you know, it's just not working. And they became baffled. Why isn't it working? And frustrated and even angry. The cows were running as if they had one pair of legs. You ever see animals run like that? Prabhupada put it, joined front and rear legs. They're just running down those rocks, and their heads up, and their tails are up. You see that with cows, especially in the spring and cold climates where they're confined in a barn. You ever seen cows like that? And they open the door the first day of spring, woo-hoo! And the cows start racing over the pastures, and their tails are up, and their heads are up. Even though the path was so rough, and as they were running, their milk was just pouring on the ground. Usually cows give milk, but in order to give milk, there has to be what's called a letdown reflex. Milk doesn't just pour out. And a mother will let down their milk when there's some affection. And they ran down the hill, and they started licking their cows as if they were going to swallow them up. You know, generally cows lick each other, but it was intense, as if they were just going to eat up their cows with affection. And the men are just like, what's going on? Why can't we stop these cows? What's happened to our cows? What's happened to us? We failed in our duty. We failed in our service. You ever feel like that? I failed in my service. I had a service to do for Krishna, and I failed. It didn't work. Don't think that just because we're serving Krishna that we're always going to be successful externally. The success, Prabhupada says, is that Krishna is pleased. And was Krishna pleased by the failure of the cowherd men to restrain the cows? Did that very failure please Krishna? Yes, why? Why did their failure please Krishna? What does it show? Yes. It shows the affection of the cowherd men, how determined they were. And it also shows how affectionate the cows were. That even the men weren't able to stop them. So sometimes our apparent failure is a success if Krishna is pleased. So the men with great difficulty went down the path. Remember, big rocks and boulders on Govardhan. So great difficulty they went down the path. And as soon as they saw the boys, who were all actually Krishna, they were filled with anuraga prema, which is one of the higher levels of prema. Completely overwhelmed with love, and all of their anger disappears. If you want to know how to conquer anger, the way to conquer anger, of course their anger is not normal anger, the way to conquer anger is by feeling great affection for Krishna. It is not possible to feel material anger and affection for Krishna at the same time. Then they started embracing their children and crying. Now, those of us who are parents here, we love our children, but we don't usually cry when we embrace them. Not usually. It has to be something very unusual. Maybe we didn't see them for a year, or they just recovered from after being hit by a car or something like that. Or they just did something extraordinary. They're crying, and they're smelling the boys' heads. They're there for a long time. And finally, they get back there, cows, and with great, great difficulty, they pull themselves away from their boys. They just don't want to leave. Somehow, they just manage. They're conflicted. Hard to get the cows away from the cows. They don't want to come. Hard to pull themselves away from their boys. Now, again, this sort of thing has been going on for a whole year. This intensity of affection. And nobody had noticed. On this day, Balaram noticed. He'd been seeing for the whole year. Why didn't Balaram notice for a whole year? Well, Krishna didn't want Balaram to feel separation from all of his friends. He didn't want Balaram to say, where's Sridhar, Sudhan, Stoka Krishna? Where are they going? You can say, what about Krishna? Didn't he feel separation from his friends? No, because Krishna was playing in an expanded form with his cowherd boyfriends who were still on the bank of the Jamuna. So first, one part of Yogamaya is pulled back, and Balaram notices there's something really strange going on here. This is not normal. Hey, could you imagine if the children here, if the parents just start crying, "Oh, I love you so much." Well, peculiar. I mean, again, you know, if somebody needs it, if they just fell off a cliff, but just in the ordinary course of events. He said they didn't need that kind of affection. And so then Balaram expanded his potency of omniscience to try to understand. And he thought, is this the power of some kind of a demoness? I know we've had them come to Vrindavan. I don't think so. Maybe it's a great sage who somehow bewildered all of these people. No, that's not it. One of the devas? Is one of the devas cast a spell on all the residents of Vrindavan? As Balaram was thinking, the second part of Yogamaya is pulled back. The first part was pulled back for him just to see that there was a problem. As the second part's pulled back, he thinks, no, because I was also bewildered. So maybe a demoness or a sage or a deva could bewilder all these other people, but they couldn't bewilder me. So as the third part of Yogamaya is pulled back, he says, you know, there's only one person who can bewilder me, and that's Krishna. So I think he's doing this. Even Balaram uses logic. Then the fourth part of Yogamaya is pulled back, and Balaram looks at Krishna, and Krishna smiles, yep, I'm the one who did this. Then Balaram said, oh, what's going on here? I had thought that all these cowherd boys and calves were your devotees. And by looking at Krishna, Balaram can understand they're all Krishna. It's not exactly that all these residents have been bewildered and they're the same boys and calves, but they're all Krishna. So then Krishna tells Balaram the whole story. So that means for about 5 or 6 days, Balaram doesn't know what's going on. Then again, it's Balaram's birthday, and Balaram is again home. Brahma then returns, because for Lord Brahma, one whole year is just like that. Right? This happens to us, by the way, even just as we get older on this planet. It's a really peculiar thing. I mean, I remember when I was 6, and my father told me the World's Fair would come when I was 9, and I said, I'll never live that long. You remember thinking like that? You know, 2 or 3 years when you were a little kid seemed like an eternity. And now, I don't know, weeks have turned into days. It's really peculiar. It's like, oh my God, I'm doing laundry again. I'm cleaning the room again. I just did it. How's the time just going like that? So for Lord Brahma, his time is just one moment. And he comes, and he thinks, what's going on? Now, I'd like us to think logically why Lord Brahma was so bewildered. You remember when Krishna expanded himself, he expanded as each cowherd boy in all their individual characteristics. So why, when Lord Brahma comes back, does he think it's just so amazing that there's another set? Can anybody give me a reason for this? Why is that inconceivable that there'd be another set? Because we put them in a cave, but why couldn't there be two sets? There's so many of them. Okay, the number. Why couldn't there be two sets? What's impossible about them? Yes. There's no two jivas the same. Impossible. There cannot be two jivas the same. And these were exactly the same. Even identical twins are not the same. I'm sure we all know some identical twins. If you know them well, you can tell them apart. There's no two Jesus the same. Each of us is unique. Each of us is unique in our likes and dislikes, and not just because we have this body. We are unique, and our relationship with Krishna is unique. We can talk about five main relationships, but within them we see so many variety, and each jiva has its own personal relationship with Krishna, and our own likes and dislikes, and our own personality type. So therefore, Lord Brahma concluded, this is impossible. And it wasn't just that they appeared alike, Lord Brahma is smart enough to know that they were really completely alike. Impossible. He said one set must be real and the other set must be false. They cannot both be real. Which one is real? He said, maybe when I go to look for them in the cave, Krishna puts them there. And then when I come back to look for them here, Krishna puts them here. Maybe Krishna's just switching them back and forth really, 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 really fast. So then Lord Brahma went into samadhi. He closed all of his chakras. He shut down all of the nadis. Entered into trance. And in trance, he put out his potency of omniscience, by which he can understand everything that's going on in the universe. And you know what? He still couldn't understand it. This is impossible. And he couldn't understand it because he offended Krishna. So although Lord Brahma has great power, his power became compared to snow in darkness. Right? In the daytime, the snow is very beautiful and bright. In the darkness, for those of you who have seen the snow, you hardly notice it. Or a glowworm or a firefly. You ever used to catch fireflies when you were a kid? And in the day, you can't even see them. So as soon as you start to show off your power before a superior power, you become inconsequential. And Brahma simply looked foolish. Then, as Lord Brahma gained a little humility and started feeling a little foolish, that he had exerted the limits of his power and not been able to understand, then Krishna showed him who the boys and calves really were. They all appeared as four-handed Vishnu. Now, we know that in the spiritual world, those with Swarupya Mukti look like Vishnu. But each of these Vishnu forms had what did they have that we knew that they were not devotees, they were Vishnu? How do you know it's Vishnu? Gotta know this, you know, if you go to Vaikunthi, you gotta know who's who, otherwise like Gopa Kumar, you're gonna get confused. Srivatsa. So Srivatsa, yes? And one more. Kastubajul. Well, they all had the Srivatsa and Kastubajul. No devotees had that. And they were glancing, each of these Vishnu forms were glancing at the pious devotees who surrounded them. Now, we were saying before that anger dissipates as soon as one feels some affection for Krishna. Actually, even if you feel an affection for a jiva, your anger will dissipate. Here, the glance of the Lord. Remember we talked about how this pastime will fulfill of our spiritual desires? The glance of the Lord is described as being full of raja, or passion. But Prabhupada says it's not passion, it's affection. That what we call passion in this world, or lust, has a spiritual form. And that spiritual form is affection. If you want, my dear friends, to conquer lust and anger, the way to do it is with affection. That is the original form. Anger is also very related to lust. Anger is called the younger brother of lust. Basically, all of our anger is because our lust is not satisfied. Because in this world, it's impossible. The things we lust after, either we don't get them, at all. The beautiful woman is married to somebody else. We don't get enough money to get the car. Whatever. We don't get it. Or we get it and it's disappointing. You marry the beautiful woman and you find out she doesn't have a beautiful mouth. You know, you get the car and you find out it doesn't drive the way you want it to drive. Or you get it and it's perfect and you lose it. Your perfect husband dies, your car gets in an accident. So either you don't get it, you get it and you're disappointed, or you get it, you're perfectly happy, and it's temporary, therefore anger. And because everything is going to end up like that, there's anger a lot, because we're always fearful. Maybe I won't get what I need. Maybe I won't get what I need. Maybe I won't get what I need. Maybe I'll get it and it won't be good. Maybe it won't be good. Maybe it won't be good. When am I going to lose it? When am I going to lose it? When am I going to lose it? A constant state of fear, and therefore a constant state of anger. Without lust, there's no fear and anger. And how does one conquer that? With affection. As soon as we feel affection for Krishna, immediately lust, anger, and greed gone. Like that. Immediately. They cannot coexist. And it's also interesting that this affection manifests as desires, just like lust is desires. It manifests as desires. Prabhupada says here that the devotees are desireless. They don't want anything. They have no desires. But yet when Krishna looks at them with this affection, with this spiritual passion, they become full of desires for service. They become full of spiritual desires. And Prabhupada says there in that purport, there was a vacant piece of sand in Vrindavan, and one devotee desired, let there be a temple in service here. Such are the desires of the devotee. So although the devotees are desireless, still, with this exchange of affection between them and the Lord, the devotees have desires which are more intense than the lust of this world and always fully satisfied. Lord Vishnu, with this glance of affection that kindles the desires of the devotees, was also being worshipped by all living entities, Charachara, the movable and the non-movable. And Lord Brahma saw that everyone is engaged in service. And Prabhupada says here, one receives a form according to the way one worships the Lord. So if we're an illusion, then the form we get is given by the demigods, or Prabhupada says, by the stars. Even my material desires are ways of worshiping the Lord, but backwards. Because I'm still worshiping the Lord, I'm still serving the Lord. Even when I'm serving my senses, they're also part of Krishna. This is also Krishna. I'm also serving Krishna, just in a backwards way. Like the prisoners in the jail. They're serving the state, making bricks or license plates or whatever they're doing. Not very pleasing service. So if my desires for service are an illusion, then the demigods arranged a particular body that corresponds to my desires. And if I am in love with Krishna, then I also get a particular body according to that type of love. Yad bhava bhavita diyo manu jastitayama sampraapya rupa mahima sanayana bhusha suktaya meva nirma pratitayastu bhanti. One gets a body, one gets ornaments, one gets a home, one gets a vehicle, one gets everything according to that desire. The essence of everything we get is desire. And all living entities were worshipping in forms according to their desire, material or spiritual, and also according to their abilities. And everybody was singing and dancing. Now Krishna says, Prabhupada says, sorry, in the Rasalila chapter, that the whole world is full of Krishna singing. And the scientists tell us that everything is vibrating. You know that? That within the atom, the electrons are going around, and the molecules are all vibrating. And vibration means sound. That means everything is emitting some sound. It's like a devotee just sent me an article, some research, where they say that everyone is emitting light. They were taking some photographs of people in a dark, completely dark room, no light. And everybody's body was not infrared heat, but everyone's body was glowing. So not only are we giving out light, we're also giving out sound. And that sound is ultimately, Prabhupada says, the sound of Krishna singing. But different living entities are dancing differently with Krishna. Prabhupada says some are responding rightly to the dancing of Krishna, and some are not responding rightly. That you ever have some people in the kirtan who are playing the cartels offbeat? Playing the mridanga offbeat? One of my good friends, he told me, I can't figure out how to play the cartels. I said, it's like jumping rope. He said, I never jumped rope when I was a kid. There you go. Right? So Krishna has this singing and dancing, and some of us are in harmony and some of us are not in harmony. But here, all the living entities were dancing and singing in harmony. From the tiniest immovable living entity like a plant to the great devas. And Lord Brahma saw so many other Brahmas from other universes and so many other Indras and Shivas. And then surrounding each Vishnu were the personified forms of all of the opulences. So personified beauty, personified wealth, personified knowledge, personified fame, personified renunciation, personification of each of the mystic powers, the personification of time, the personification of material nature in each of the modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance. Each of the material elements, personification of earth, of water, of fire, personification of the different samskaras, the different impressions that cause us to remember or forget, personifications of various desires, personifications of various activities around each form of Vishnu. So Lord Brahma had been bewildered before as to how there could be two. Well, now he was bewildered beyond bewildered, beyond bewildered. But now his bewilderment, before his bewilderment was due to his pride, that he thought, hey, you know, I'm the head honcho in the universe, and I took these guys away. How come there's another set? Not possible. Now his bewilderment is due to ecstasy. He's feeling great astonishment and ecstasy, and he becomes completely stunned. And because Lord Brahma's golden color, he looks like a golden doll, just stunned. It described that he looks like a puppet, or he feels just like a puppet, like he's immobile, or like some clay doll next to the deity. He realizes, I'm nobody. You know, we're so afraid to realize that we're nobody, but it's such a lovely thing. You know, you don't have to prove yourself anymore. You can just be who you are, a little something, a little speck. This whole universe is just a little speck. And within this whole universe, this planet is a little speck. And within this planet, New Zealand is a little speck. And in New Zealand, Auckland is a little speck. And in Auckland, this property is a little speck. And on this property, we're just little specks. And we don't have to prove anything. We don't have to try to be anything that we're not. We can just be who we are. Humility is a very liberating and wonderful and joyous thing. I don't have to pretend to be important and significant and then I'm doing all sorts of very important things and then I'm so great and so smart and so powerful. So Lord Brahma is such a relief for him. I'm not really the big gun. I'm just one Lord Brahma among millions and millions and millions. I'm just a servant of Krishna like anybody else. And at that point, he was in so much ecstasy and just reeling with astonishment and humility and happiness that he couldn't see anything anymore. Then Krishna removed his yoga maya. Because Krishna can only be seen according to how he wants to be seen. And Lord Brahma, in his state of being stunned, had fallen over. As Krishna removed his yoga maya, Lord Brahma gradually kind of woke up and got up and opened his eyes. Felt like he was sort of coming back from the dead. Then he went back to his ahankara, I am. I'm Lord Brahma. This universe is my possession. I'm the creator of the universe. And that's right, that's who I am. I got that. I've forgotten for a while. I don't know who I was or what was going on. Oh, look at Vrindavan. Oh, it's filled with trees that are the source of life for all living entities. All the six seasons are present here. There's no envy here, no lust, and no greed. Even the tigers and the deer are cooperating, although nobody comments as to what the tigers eat. You want to say, what do they eat? Then Lord Brahma, he's still feeling very happy. He starts offering obeisances like a rod. He's touching the ground. Generally, the demigods don't touch the ground. You never ever go to a low-class neighborhood and you're like, you know, I don't live here. I remember the old Brooklyn Temple. The local people. This was the days before people cleaned up after their dogs. Do they have a law like that here in New Zealand too? They have to clean up your dog poop? This was before those days. So there would be dog poop all over the place. And especially in the gutter, you know, where the street meets the sidewalk. So all over the sidewalk, and especially would accumulate in the gutter. And then in the summertime, it gets really hot. A lot hotter than here. And people in the city open up the fire hydrants and flood the street. But of course, it's all full of dog poop. And the children are all playing, seriously, in the flooded dog poopy toilet bowl of the gutter. And so I remember one time going on Sankirtan with one of the other ladies. And as we were walking by the scene, I said, well, I'm glad I don't live here. And she looked at me and she said, but you do live here. So the demigods usually think, you know, we're not part of this earth scene. They don't touch the ground. You know, I'm above, literally, I'm above this stuff. But Lord Rama was touching the ground and falling down like a rod over and over. He'd fall down, offer dandavats, get up, offer dandavats, get up. Offer dandavats, get up. And Lord Brahma's forehead's looking four different directions. And I don't know how he did this, but somehow he got all four of his helmets to touch Krishna's lotus feet. And he's crying in love, and crying, and crying, and crying. And he was crying so much that he was giving Krishna's lotus feet a bath. And how was Krishna there? He still had that same food in his left hand. Still hadn't taken a bite of it. He still had that yogurt and rice and fruit. And the fruit was still sticking out between his petal-like fingers. And I don't know if he still had the pickle in his right hand. And he was still pure just to be looking. Where's my cows? Where's my boys? When Sukadeva Goswami describes this, he's using the present tense. Because as he's describing Leela, he's actually seeing it. This is, of course, ultimately the stage to which we should all come. Since the Lord is in our heart, right? Because Krishna is in our heart, that means all of his leelas, which are all eternal, are also unfolding in our heart at every moment. And just like if you have a radio, you can tune in a radio station or a television station. There's radio waves, television waves going through this room. And we can't hear them or see them because we don't have the proper instrument. In the same way, these leelas are taking place within our heart. We have the proper instrument. It just needs a cleaning. Now, sadhana bhakti means it's in the repair shop. So then Lord Brahma says wonderful prayers. I'm not going to discuss Lord Brahma's prayers because each of Lord Brahma's prayers would be at least a month to discuss. Of course, he says the famous prayer, Tathena Kampan, that if you want, Dayabak, if you want to inherit the kingdom of God as any child will inherit the property of the father, then you tolerate the difficulties while always thanking the Lord, offering obeisances to the Lord for his mercy. Not tolerate like, but thank you, Lord, thank you, Lord, thank you for your mercy. So now the whole time that Lord Rama is praying, what's Krishna doing? He didn't say anything. You know, when Indra, who committed a much greater offense, Indra didn't hide the devotees. He tried to kill them. Indra tried to kill all of the residents of Vrindavan, not just some of them, all of them, all of the animals, all of the people, all of the vegetation. And he wasn't doing it just out of curiosity. He was doing it out of anger, due to his pride. You know, how dare these people not worship me? But when Indra talked to Krishna, Krishna answered. In this case, Krishna doesn't answer at all. He's just standing there as a little boy with his food in his hand. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that he's thinking, who is this? Is this Brahma? Who is this Brahma? Why is he talking to me? What does he want? Why is he bothering me? I want to play with my friends. And Krishna is described there as a chucha, one who never falls down. And it says in this case, he doesn't leave his mood of a cowherd boy. He stays in that mood. I'm just a cowherd boy. Who is this guy? Why do I have to answer him? And Krishna does forgive Lord Brahma. He does forgive him because he has a lot of affection for Lord Brahma, but he doesn't speak anything. So with just some gesture, Prabhupada says, just some movement of his eyebrows or his eyes, he tells Lord Brahma to return. Now, what did Lord Brahma pray for? What did he say he wanted in his prayers? He had a request. What was his request? Yes, he wants to take birth as a blade of grass. Anybody here want to take birth as a blade of grass? When we contemplate what's going to happen to us after this life, you know, we think, maybe I'm going to get to go back to Godhead. Oh, maybe that won't work out. Maybe I'll just be Krishnendra's next kid. Let's see. I'm going to be born in India. You know, there's that story where the Prabhupada was speaking to some of the devotees and said, you know, if you don't go back to Godhead, you can take birth in a pious Indian family. Shruti Kirti tells a story. He said, does it have to be in India? I don't like India. Prabhupada said, well, now there's so many devotees outside of India, you can take birth in their families too. But how many of us sit and think, I'd really like to be a blade of grass? Anybody do that? It'd be really nice if I could just, especially if you're already Lord Brahma. You know, the top body you can possibly get in the universe, materially speaking. And how do you get much lower than a blade of grass? People plant grass to step on or for animals to eat. It's not even ornamental. It doesn't even have much fragrance. It's not very pretty. It doesn't have much fragrance. It's there just because it's really hardy and you can step on it. Who wants to be grass? And he's willing even to be grass outside Vrindavan, right on the border. He says, if I'm not qualified to be grass in Vrindavan, then let me be grass right at the border. So if the devotees are coming and going, they'll step on me. And Krishna indicates to him, not now. You have a job to do. You're supposed to be Lord Brahma. You're supposed to be running the universe. Finish your job first. And so the importance of duty. We're given some service, we do it. We do it to the best of our ability. We don't quit. We don't quit in the middle, unless Krishna asks us to quit in the middle. There's also a time to quit. Like Prabhupada says, talking about taking vanaprastha, he said, just like a shop, at a certain time, the shop closes. There may be more customers, there may be more business, but at a certain time, you close the shop. So at a certain time, you say, okay, renounce the world, done. But there's so many more things to do. Never mind. But until that time comes, one doesn't quit. One has to know when to not quit and when to quit. So Krishna's saying, no, you have to stick to your job. In contrast, we see when Gopakumara was Lord Brahma, Gopakumara had a desire to see the Brahmajyoti. And he was told then, you don't have to wait until the end of your lifetime as Lord Brahma. You can go now. Some other person will come as Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma goes to finish his duty. And then, there's Krishna's friends back on the bank of the Jamuna. And Krishna comes back to them. And there are the calves. He's brought back the calves. And the calves are back in the forest. And the cowherd boys say, boy, you didn't take very long. You found those calves really fast, Krishna. That's amazing. How did you do that? They had all wandered off. And we didn't even eat one bite of food while you Now, generally, when devotees are separated from Krishna, how do they feel about each moment? Like a yuga, right? Govinda Virahena may. It's yuga. There's one yuga when Virahena, when I'm separated from Krishna, each moment. Now, in this time, one whole year felt like only a moment. They'd been separated from Krishna for a year, apparently, but to them, it was just like that, by Krishna's influence of Yogamaya. He didn't want them to feel the separation. And they were so happy. They said, wow, Krishna's our hero. He found the cows, and now he's come back. And so they come back, and they go on with their eating, and their joking, and their sticking of the jasmine flowers, and the samosas, and they're calling for the monkeys. And then they finish their lunch, and they're playing. And they're going back to the village. And as they're going back to the village, Krishna's calling each cow and calf by name. And as he does, the animals respond. And the cowherd boys are so much enjoying this speaking. They say, the most beautiful sound to any person is the sound of their name. That's true to Krishna also, of course. And you notice that if a lot of people are talking, you know that sort of funny sound when a lot of people are talking, that sort of buzz sound? If someone says your name, even on the other side of the room, you can pick it out. So Krishna's calling each of the animals by name. And as they're walking back to Vrindavan, what do they see? They walk past something. What do they walk past?
The skin.
Yes! The dried up body of Agasura. And the cowherd boy starts saying, oh yeah, you killed that Agasura. Somehow they didn't notice it was a year dried up. And they come back in the village. And now, unlike what they hadn't done for a whole year, again they start praising Krishna. Guess what Krishna did today? Which, of course, they hadn't said for a year. For one whole year, they'd never come back saying, guess what Krishna did today? He killed the Agasura. He brought back the calves right away. And as Krishna's there in his home, Nanda Maharaj looks at Mother Yasoda and says, you know, our little boy's growing up. He's been sleeping in our room all this time, but I think we need to build a separate room for him that he can sleep in. And so they start on that. And meanwhile, Lord Brahma goes back to Satyaloka and he says, my dear friends, you won't believe what just happened to me. And he tells all of the residents of Satyaloka his story. And as he says it, he experiences an ecstasy of astonishment again and again. So, I hope you enjoyed that story. And I might take a couple minutes for questions. We're going to have breakfast. Then at 10 o'clock, we're going to hear the story of the dancing on Kaliya. Is there any way we're going to get any heat? Is that possible? Is heat possible? Oh, it's really, is that the problem? It's really, really noisy? Maybe we can have it on during breakfast when no one's here? Would that be okay? So maybe someone can run the noisy monster and close the doors from 9 to 10. So we'll come back at 10. At 10, we'll go right into Kaliya. And then at 11, Sridhar Prabhu is going to sing until 11:30. If you want to look at the schedule again, there's one schedule out there. I blue tacked it on top of the mortgage thing. And then, just a temporary, don't worry, I'll take it down. And then there's another one on the back for it also. Okay, so maybe we'll just end here, so we'll have an hour and 10 minutes for breakfast. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.